Welcome to Super Talk, the podcast that scratches your superhero itch. Just two suburban dads nerding out over superhero stuff on the small screen and the big. Buckle up, people. Enjoy the ride.
Welcome to Super Talk, the spooky weekly podcast dedicated to news and reviews of comic book media on the big and small screen. My name is Spooky Professor Pettis, and with me, as always, is my illustrious co-host, Titanium Tony Estrella. Titanium!
Hey, Professor! Having a little...
technical difficulties there.
Little issues with the mics. You know, the ghouls and ghosts in here have been screwing with our headsets, but all is well. All is back up and running. Professor! Welcome to the Halloween episode. I'm not going to be able to wear this mask the whole time. If you check us out on YouTube, we look
ridiculous.
You actually look Malcolm. Great. What are you wearing there?
Yeah, if Icarus from the Eternals was balding and had to wear glasses to help his vision, then I might pass off as him. But
hey, I'm no Captain America either, so I think we're both in the same boat. Professor, take us to school.
All right, well, before we get started, we want to thank the listeners that bring the show to you, and those are our patrons, patreon.com/supertalk. That's how you become a patron. As we mentioned last week, we're going to do a really big giveaway for all the people who are patrons of the show. When we get to our milestone anniversary episode, we're going to do another giveaway. So if you want to join, patreon.com/supertalk, and really help us out, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Thank you, boys and girls. We really appreciate it. Hey, listen up here. We got a great episode here. We're going to go over everything you need to know for the Eternals before the movie. The professor is going to drop some serious knowledge. So take out your notebooks, get your pen ready, number two pencil for those that desire, and take some serious notes because he's going over everything from the comic book lore to the power sets of each Eternal and going over each Eternal. So you kind of get you up to speed before you see the movie. And I was talking to Greg Vire, our biggest fan. And he was excited about this episode because he really doesn't know a whole lot about the Eternals. So he was really looking forward to it.
Yeah. And as we, I think mentioned previously, I think Marvel really didn't have a grand plan or big plans for the Eternals as characters. I think they, had plans to kind of introduce the Inhumans into the MCU many years ago, and they kind of had to change those plans a little bit when that Inhumans television show really kind of did not do well. And so they said, hey, let's...
Oh, it bombed.
Yeah,
it bombed. Yeah.
And they decided to pick another team of characters, and they wanted to kind of introduce some of the space-based, kind of galactic, universal kind of beings out there, that something that they could introduce as some big threats. And what we're definitely going to go over that. And I think that's exactly what this movie is set to do. It's to introduce us to these kind of cosmic entities and the kind of the grand scheme of the universe.
Yeah.
That makes up the MCU. So, cool. Yeah. All right. Well, let's start with some reviews. Not a lot of brand new content this week. We did get a couple of things. I did get a chance to watch this. I don't know if you got to see. So Disney Plus has been releasing the Marvel Legends series, and then the Marvel, it's Studios Assembled series. So the Legends series is something that they've been doing to kind of...
Clips to get people up to speed on what's going on and how they put things together, right?
Yeah, so they're doing that for every kind of big movie and every big kind of Disney Plus show. Just so if you don't remember who these characters are, let's reintroduce them to you. And again, it's just rehashing some of the clips of the movies they've been in. We got them for Falcon and Winter Soldier and Black Widow and Wanda and Vision, all the other ones that we had seen before. I do believe they're coming out with the Hawkeye episode is coming out and being released on that Disney Plus day, the same day that I believe Shang-Chi is being dropped on Disney Plus as well. So
yeah.
Sometime in mid-November, we're going to get both of those. So
I
that'll be
November 17th.
Yep, so that'll be a big way for you to kind of get reintroduced to Hawkeye if you've forgotten who he is. But they do have that Marvel Studios Assembled series, which is really a recap, kind of behind the scenes making of episodes. We've gotten them for all the Disney Plus series thus far. And they just did one for the What If series. And it was really, number one, really good to see how they not only came up with the characters that they were going to have in the show and the stories that they decided to pull from, but also the art style and the animation style they decided to go with was very... you know, reminiscence of Norman Rockwell. That was kind of like the type of art that they wanted to do. And it was a really good show. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. Marvel Studio Assembled Making of What If. And Kevin Feige was on there a lot, and he was really talking about not only what they were able to do with this season, but the blank canvas that the What If show gives them to kind of explore these kind of crazy ideas and not really draw from comic book lore necessarily, but hey, what if we just wanted to do this thing, right?
What if, right? Yeah. I mean, like, twist the story just a little bit to have a different outcome. I thought it was really brilliant.
Yeah, and they talked about some plans for season two. So we know that season two has been greenlit. They're already starting to work on that. They do have the storyboards and storylines in place for what they're going to do with next season. And from what we understand, what they told us in this episode was that the relationship between the Watcher and Captain Carter is going to be even more pronounced in this next season. So she's going to be continuing to play a big role in those episodes going forward, which is great.
Yeah, I think he had that relationship was obviously a little bit more special than the other characters. So I thought it was cool.
Yeah, very good. And I wanted to give everybody a little bit of kind of my first impressions of the new season of Young Justice dropped on HBO Max the day of the DC fandom. And the first four episodes, I believe, have been released now. They come out every Friday. We got the first two the first week, and then they've had two more since then. And to give everybody my first impressions of this season, I'm kind of a little disappointed, and also it seems to be a little bit slow so far. The first four episodes have been on Mars, which they call Mars in the DC universe, and that's where Martian Manhunter's from. It's also where McGann, who is Ms. Martian Manhunter, or Ms. Martian, she's getting married to Connor Kent, and they go to Mars for the wedding. And there's all this kind of, there's a plot, and they're talking about the three different races of Martians and how they don't get along, and there's a caste system, and it's been really strange, and I really haven't thought it's great so far. I'm kind of waiting for the plot to pick up. I'm like, where are they going with this? And can we just get off this planet and get back to like fighting universal stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been a little slow so far. So if you guys are watching that or you're planning on watching it,
stick with it.
Yeah. Don't be surprised if you're kind of wondering where they're going with it, because that's what I'm wondering too. All right. Well, let's jump into the news section. We've got a few items this week. You mentioned something about news about Nova.
Yeah, there's and it's a pretty credible source from what I'm telling, from what I'm reading online. But yeah, Nova is supposed to start production in 2023, which, if that is true, leads me to believe that they will probably introduce him in Guardians of the Galaxy, or sooner. So that's kind of exciting. I mean,
so is that an official like green light announcement from Marvel, or some behind the scenes credible source that basically is
behind the scenes credible source? It's okay. Not a green light from Marvel. We know, you know, Fantastic Four, Blade, you know, those things are definitely in the works. But this was Marvel was,
We've always thought that they're going to do a Nova movie, right? Yeah,
Nova from Xandar, and apparently he survived the attack. He was one of the only survivors of the attack, and I hope that he's in Guardians of the Galaxy. And the rumor's pretty credible, so we'll see. But again, it's just a rumor at this time.
So I guess we can only hope that during D23, you know, my gut tells me, you know, Disney Plus Day is going to give us a lot of information about Marvel's plans for their Disney Plus series in the near future. I think we're going to get some release dates centered around the series that we know are coming, the ones that they've already announced. We'll get some release dates for those that we don't know quite yet, like Ms. Marvel and Moon Knight and She-Hulk, and we'll get some release dates for those. But that's really going to be focused on the Disney Plus content. The Marvel movies and the kind of the Phase 4/early Phase 5 stuff, I'm hoping they make some of those announcements at D23. We're probably going to get some trailers for some of these properties as well during that time frame. But
we'll get an announcement that Shang-Chi 2 is going to go into production as well.
They'll get a green light for that one.
I think
so.
It came out with this rumor about Nova, so I think so.
So those would be two projects that they would be very excited to announce during D23.
Right.
That, you know, we're not only greenlighting a Shang-Chi 2, which would I think would be widely accepted because of how successful that movie was. But then to have some announcement about, hey, we plan to start filming a Nova movie in 2023, that'd be a huge announcement, and it would be like an early Phase 5 film. Now, to your point, Titanium, why don't they, you know, kind of like introduce that character somehow in an earlier film, and Guardians would be the film that makes sense.
You know, James Gunn has come out and said on Twitter that he's going to introduce a lot of new characters moving forward in the MCU. And I think not only Adam Warlock, but I think Nova will be one of those characters. So
excited about it. I mean, that's Rick Ryder, Nova. That's a character we've been waiting to see come to the MCU. And again, the more space-based kind of cosmic threats that they face, the more likelihood of a character like Nova being relevant and one that they would want to introduce into the MCU.
Yeah, Richard Ryder, right? I think Richard?
Richard, yeah.
Okay. He's one of... I mean, some of the concept art from Nova is cool as shit. I mean, he's just a badass. So I would love for them to introduce Nova. That's... For me, that is my cosmic Captain America. You know? That's my cosmic Captain America. Yeah. So Star-Lord's up there too. That's my Iron Man, a cosmic Iron Man. But Nova is my cosmic Captain America.
Well, and there's another thought there that it may not be Richard Ryder version of Nova. Maybe another. There's been several versions of Nova.
The young kid that he took under his wing, right?
Yeah, and he ended up becoming part of the Young Avengers. So, hey, if they're setting that team up, you know, hey, a young hero, Nova, coming into the MCU could be a Young Avengers introduction there. You got to take the mask off.
I got to take this mask off. I'm dripping. I'm sweating my ass off.
Titanium does leak.
Yes. Excellent. Okay, what else we got, Professor?
Well, you had a rumor about, another rumor about Baldur the Brave coming to a movie, coming to Doctor Strange movie? That's a strange place for him, not strange, needless to say, but strange place for him to show up.
I agree. He's the brother, half-brother of Thor, Baldur, apparently an unbelievable warrior. Where has he been?
He's one character that's been missing from the Thor movies and the Asgardian lore. We've seen the Warriors 3, we've seen Lady Sif, we've seen a bunch of the other characters that are prominently featured in Asgardian myths, and as well as the Thor comics and the Thor movies, but we haven't seen Baldur, so it's not surprising. This would be a character they would want to introduce into that team, but where's he been? That's a good question.
Yeah, so that's going to be kind of exciting, but hey, if they bring him in, Thor's half-brother, and I know in the comics, Loki killed him at one point, and then he came back, had to fight his way out of Hela. He's a badass warrior. That'll be interesting. So yeah, kind of a credible source there too. I mean, I'm not saying, but their track record, like some of these rumors are just nuts. Like their track record for these guys are 50%. These guys that I'm hearing this from are actually, 80, 90%. So kind of credible insiders, maybe, but that'd be kind of cool. Wouldn't that be a cool character?
Yeah. I guess maybe that's one way that they feel they can introduce that character is in a movie like Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, because he hasn't been around. And maybe in our version of the multiverse, Baldur doesn't exist, and that's why we haven't seen him. And maybe in some other version, he does, and he comes in that way. Who knows?
Great. Yeah. Bring it on. I'd like to see it.
And then you got some new character details for Titan Season 4. So we mentioned earlier, Titan Season 3 ended last week. They've already been greenlit for season 4. That is coming. And then they've made some announcements about some of the big bads.
To be honest
coming.
With you, the big bads that I only recognize on here is Blood Brother. The rest of them, Brother Blood, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know Mother Mayhem or Jinx.
Me either.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
they're kind of really unknown big bads. So we'll see. But that's exciting news that they have some villains that they haven't introduced yet, which excites me, because then it's not like that same old storyline that you know, and you're always comparing the Joker or the Riddler or to other people's perception.
Well, they had to pull out the Scarecrow this season to kind of be a big bad for them, and not really a Titans you know, specific villain, or Teen Titans specific villain. It was one of Batman's, you know, villains, right?
Yeah, but so. Been played on the big screen and small screen before. So
sure.
I'm always looking at that actor's interpretation of them or the direction that he's giving on portraying these characters. So these characters, it's like a fresh slate, right?
Yeah.
So it kind of goes along with Titans, fresh slate for the end of season three. They wrapped up some of the storylines.
And again, I just have to question some of the writing on this show. You know, when season two, which was by far the best season of that show, that was the season with Deathstroke and his kids, which was just fantastic.
That was good.
They ended that season.
Jericho, that whole storyline was so cool.
Fantastic. And they ended that season with a teaser of Blackfire basically coming to Earth. You know, kind of angry, and she's basically gonna, you know, kill her sister so she can take over the throne. And I was like, whoa, this is awesome. And then they completely changed that this season, and they became friends, and they were like teammates and liked each other. And I'm like, that's not the way it's supposed to be. Blackfire comes to Earth to try to kill her. I mean, come on, that's what's supposed to happen. So I think maybe they decided they changed course while they were writing the season. No, that's not what we want to do with this character. We're like, okay. So
multiple villains, maybe multiple storylines.
Yeah.
It might help the show
for sure. All right. Well, good news. All right. Well, let's jump right into our topic of the week this week. And of course, that's brought to you by our friends over at Studio GG Studios, home of the Man Band, Corn on the Cob. Out from the flood, they've fortified their studio, and now they're going to be back in business here.
Yeah, you see the picture right here. I put it up right here. I got a shot of the new epoxy floor that they put in. So yeah, they're coming along. Should be very soon. I say a couple of weeks. Studio GG Studios will be up on their feet and rocking out as usual.
All right, we can't wait to see Buffalo Tim. We know that's going to be their next big release.
Yep.
All right. Well, we've got topic of the week this week is really to dive in the history of the Eternals. So the Eternals movie is releasing a week from last Friday. So it'll be this Friday coming up, November 5th. You and I will not be in town and will likely be.
We're going to Key West for a couple of days for a good friend of ours, Amy Kelly's 50th birthday. About 20 couples. It'll be fun. We're going to do a little fishing, right? And some drinking, probably.
No,
maybe.
No,
we're not going to
do that. Dry weekend.
Dry weekend? Okay.
Dry weekend.
That's all right with me.
Yeah.
Then I'll go to the movie in Key West. No, I'll probably see it Sunday night when we get back.
Yeah, I don't think any of us would pray for a rain day in Key West, but if it ever happened.
Yeah, you know. We got a backup plan.
But yeah, we'll be seeing that movie as soon as we can when we get back for sure. But that movie does come out this Friday. We want to give the audience a little bit of a kind of a refresher on who these characters are. Now,
yeah,
I'm going to caveat that with a couple of things. I'm going to talk about the Eternals in the comic books, like where did they come from?
Which the professor has a Eternal comic up on set here right now, right?
Yeah. And so we're going to go into their history in the comic books, you know, how they were created, why they were created, kind of the comic history. Then we'll kind of get into each of the characters specifically, and we'll talk a little bit about the differences between their comic rendition and what they're doing with the movies. The movie decided to take these characters, and I think they're drawing a lot from the story that we'll tell. And I don't know that for sure. I haven't seen the movie. I don't know any of this at all. We're making some assumptions here based on the trailers that we've seen. But I think they're going to draw a lot from the comic history. And there's going to be some of the things that I'm going to talk about that are being there.
A few gender swaps here and there.
There are a couple, and we'll talk through that.
I'm all right with that.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I get that.
Yeah, and a very, very diverse cast as well. I think many, many different races, creeds, colors, religions, all represented across the
Eternals
team.
Sexual orientation.
Yeah, exactly.
All of it.
Yeah, so.
Once again, okay with that.
Yep, and so we'll kind of talk through that. And what they've done in the movies is they've given each Eternal kind of a unique ability. In the comics, they all collectively shared a lot of abilities, but they did have one or two things that they did special to themselves, and we'll kind of talk through that a little bit. We'll just go through some of those differences, though.
Very cool. I think people are waiting for this.
All right, so just a brief history about at the creation of the universe, there was a being called Eternity, and Eternity created these beings called Celestials, and the Celestials their job was to seed and experiment on life throughout the universe. So their whole purpose is to create life on planets, cultivate that life, and to experiment on them. And that's kind of what they were doing. So they went to planet and they would, you know, create life. And then they come back and check, a few million years later and see how things are going.
Celestials, big, giant creatures.
Giant beings. And we know we're going to see them in the movie for sure. So the Celestials came to Earth about a million years ago. And this was at the dawn of man. So this is when... apes first, started walking on 2 feet and all of a sudden were, gaining some intelligence and ability to create, weapons and tools and things like that. And they're like, oh, this is an interesting evolution of a species. Let's go check them out. So they came to Earth a million years ago, and that was called the first celestial host. So when the Celestials visit Earth, it's called a celestial host. They're coming to Earth to kind of do their job and do things here. And one of the things they did a million years ago was they experimented on mankind. They basically subjected these early Cro-Magnon humans and to their, experiments. And during the experimentation, they created two different other species. They created the Deviants, which was kind of, well, what if we take some of these genetics of a human being and twist them in kind of like weird ways? And they created the Deviants that way. And then another Celestial did some experimentation on the humans and created what he felt was like the perfect version of a human, which are the Eternals.
Right.
And so he created about, it wasn't many, it was like 20 to 50 of each of them. And then the Eternals left them there and they gave him explicit instructions. They said, you are not to procreate. So you're not supposed to create more versions of yourself and you're not supposed to interfere
with the
humankind, right? Not supposed to interfere or mess with them at all. Just leave them to be themselves. And then what ended up happening is the Celestials left and left the Eternals and Deviants here. And for the most part, they followed their instructions. However, the Deviants created a city of their own, a very hidden city, and they started procreating. And they created thousands of them, that was not really what they were supposed to be doing. Yeah. And the Eternals found out about this, and some of those Deviants started attacking humans and killing humans and eating humans.
There's a leader of the Deviants, correct?
Yes.
Cro?
Right. But he wasn't the original leader of the Deviants. That's who he is in the movie. Mm-hmm. But what happened is the Eternals were fighting against them, trying to protect humankind from the Deviants, but they were basically being overrun. I mean, there was just too many of them. And so they had no choice but to call the Celestials and say, hey, we need your help. Something's going really wrong here. The Celestials came back to Earth, and this was a second Celestial host, and they came to Earth, and they basically killed off most of the Deviants, almost all of them, some of the Eternals, but they kept a lot of the Eternals around, but they killed off most of humankind, and this also resulted in the sinking of Atlantis going underneath the ocean. So that was responsible for Atlantis going under the ocean. Atlantis was a big city above the ocean. And the second Celestial host caused it to fall into the ocean. But the Eternals were able
Which is a storyline I think we're going to get in the Wakanda Forever.
Okay. That'd be great.
Yeah.
So the Eternals were able to, keep safe a certain number of human beings and save them from this devastation and, kept them safe during the Celestial host so that they could then repopulate the Earth. And that's what they did. They kind of helped them. And then over the next several years, the Eternals definitely helped humankind, and they would do things like, teach them how to create, weapons, teach them how to create housing, turn dry riverbeds into flowing rivers to make help their civilizations
farm,
thrive. Irrigate, yeah. Right. So that's what the Celestials, Eternals were doing there, right? And they were given the task by the Celestials after the second Celestial host to watch over and protect the human race. And that's kind of why they're here. Some unique things about the Eternals. Their city was called Olympia. And while they were in their city of Olympia, they gained the attention of the Olympic gods of Olympus, right? Of the Greek gods. And the Greek gods, felt found they had a lot in common, and they shared a lot of the same ideals, you know, that they depended on man, they were there to protect man, and the Greek gods needed the worship of man for them to be successful, right? Right? For them to thrive, man needed to worship them. So they formed a partnership, and the Greek gods said, hey, why don't you guys kind of be like our the version of ourselves on Earth, and people will think you're us, but you know you're the Eternals and we're Greek gods. But you know they'll see if they see you, you'll be reminded of a Greek god, and that will give them faith, right? And they'll pray to us. And that's when Athena actually changed her name from her. She used to have a different name, but she changed her name to Athena to kind of be more representative of Athena, the Greek god. Right. So. Anyway, so that's kind of there's a unique tie there that in the comic books. There is history of the two of those groups working together and being partners.
Nice.
They do have, in the comic books, one of the unique things about the Eternals is they, and I don't know if we're going to see this in the movie at all.
I think we do. I think there's a scene where they're kind of all floating and there's like electricity connecting them. At the scene of that, I think we're going to see
on the beach
that.
Or something like that?
Yeah. And then when they're sitting around the table.
Can I tell people what it is first before you're...
I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
So they have the ability to combine the will and intelligence of each of the Eternals into a single entity called the Unimind.
Right.
And they can basically, you know, it's kind of like Wonder Twin powers activate. They get together and, they, you know, it's like forming Voltron.
Yeah, right? They link up, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can create, they can connect to each other and they become one being called the Unimind. And it's extremely powerful. Powerful enough that it could fight off a Celestial if it had to. So I don't know if that's going to be the movie. Titanium saying that he might have seen some scenes in some of the trailers that might lead us to believe that we see the Unimind at some point in time.
At some point, not just the Unimind to fight off the Celestials or to become extremely powerful, but they use it to be all of one mind so that their focus on what they're doing and their objective is all of one mind, right?
We'll see. That'd be great. That'd be awesome. And one of the reasons why they're called the Eternals is they have the ability to resurrect each other. So if they die in battle, they die, you know, something happens to them and they can be reincarnated. Basically, they go into these little capsules and then their bodies get remade and then their consciousness is back in their bodies and
wow.
They have a new body. So they're not.
And they use the Unimind to do that?
No, they don't. It's just an ability they have, right?
So, I did not know
that. Yeah, they have the ability to, you know, and they're not, they do functionally live thousands of years, but if they ever, for some reason, something happened to them, they could just be reincarnated.
Oh.
They could get a new body and they're back in business. So,
interesting.
It's happened many times, yep, in the comics. So that's kind of like the comic book history of the Eternals, which is kind of, you know, general history of them as a group and the characters. So here's what we know about the movie, and we're drawing some things from scenes we've seen in the trailers, some of the clips that Marvel's released to us, you know, kind of giving us some background on each of these characters. We know that they were brought to Earth thousands of years ago. This is what they tell us in the trailer, to watch over mankind and protect them from the deviants. So we believe the deviants are on Earth. We've seen them in the trailers, and that the Eternals are there to not interfere with man. They've been instructed not to interfere with man in the affairs of man.
In the trailer, it kind of looks like they do kind of interact with man. So that'll be interesting to see.
They interact, right? But they're not there to interfere, right? Like if man is you know fighting a war against each other, they're not supposed to favor one side and help one side out versus the other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene where I believe Druig is upset about it, and Ajax says, you know, don't do anything. We're not supposed to interfere.
Yeah.
So they've been instructed by the Eternals, only interfere in the affairs of man when the deviants are involved. If the deviants are involved, you can, you know, you have
get involved.
Free will to go in there and protect man. But if they're not, stay away and leave them alone.
They even say that there's a scene where the Black Knight is
talking. Whitman.
Yeah, he's talking and he says, why didn't you help with Thanos? We were instructed not to interfere. So that's interesting.
Yeah, by who? And they said the Eternal. You know, they talk about the Celestials,
yeah.
Right? Right. And so, again, we see that they fight the Deviants several times in the trailers, and we assume that that's something that's going to happen in the movies. All right, well, let's go over some of the individual characters that we have that are going to be ones that we know are in the movie, right? The individual Eternals characters themselves. So in the movie, Ajak, who's played by Selma Hayek,
smoke show.
She is in the movies the de facto leader of the Eternals. In the comics, it's a male character, Ajak. So that is one that they gender swapped, right? Yeah. So that's a male character in the comics.
Okay with that. I'm okay with that.
And in the comics, Ajak can fly, can shoot energy blasts from his hands, and has the ability to communicate with the Celestials. So that is one unique ability that Ajak had, was he could communicate with the Celestials. In the movies, very similar, but it's a female character. She can communicate directly with the Celestials. So if they ever have to talk to the Celestials or communicate or get messages from the Celestials, she's the one who gets them.
Right. And it's considered their spiritual leader, right?
Right. Spiritual leader.
And more of a thinker, not a fighter.
Right. And but her powers in the movies are kind of healing powers. So if somebody gets hurt, you know, she can heal them. That's kind of her power set in the movies. And again, a gender swapped role, but that's who's Selma Hayek's playing. Then we have Icarus, who is being played by James Madden. In the comics, he has flight, super strength, psionics. He does have the and many of the Eternals in the comics do have some psionic ability, like telekinetic powers and telepathy powers.
Yeah.
He has that in the comics, but he can shoot, you know, cosmic energy blasts from his eyes. So that's everybody's wondering, well, you know, Superman shoots like red beams out of his eyes. What comes out of Icarus's eyes? It's actually cosmic energy that's coming directly out of his eyes.
They all have cosmic energy, right? So the Sorcerer Supreme has a different kind of energy, and then
Their energy, and again, I think they're doing this in the movies as well, is drawn directly from the cosmos, right? They're given cosmic energy by the Eternals, and I believe, you know, the way that the movie's manifesting those powers is in these kind of golden shapes and forms and everything like that they have, and that's the cosmic energy flowing through them that they've been granted or gifted. But he's virtually identical in the movies. You know, he is not the leader, but he is the strongest and most capable of all the, you know, he's kind of think of him as, you know, the Superman of the Eternals. Definitely a strong and capable fighter, and is one of the ones that's out in front whenever there's any trouble.
Their lead warrior.
Right. Mm-hmm. The next one is Kingo. In the comics, he has superhuman strength like all the Eternals, but he prefers to fight as a samurai. So he trained with the samurai, and he's an incredible swordsman in the comic book. So that's kind of his, although he does have superhuman strength like most of the Eternals does, he prefers to fight in the way that the samurai do. So he doesn't use some of his internal powers when he fights. That's kind of his powers in the comic books. In the movie, it looks like he can manipulate and generate energy blasts that come out of his hands, like bolts of energy that come out of his hands. And he's one of the fighters that's in the movie.
Cool. Right?
Makari, also in the comics, is a male character in the comics. This is another one they gender swapped. Superhuman speed is kind of the unique power that Makari has in the comic books. Same in the movie, but it's a female character. So it's a female character, and I believe she's deaf.
She is deaf.
Yeah, yep. She's a deaf female character, but she has super speed, and that's the same power she has in the comics. But it's, again, a female character. And a male character in the comics. That's one of the other ones they did gender swap.
Super speed.
Yep, super speed. Fastos, in the comics, he has basically heat blasts that come out of his hands. He can create these intensely hot blasts of energy from his hands that create these high, intense levels of heat. In the movies, it's being changed. This is now being played by an African-American actor. Also plays the character in the movies is a gay character as well. Mm-hmm. So this is another kind of way they've introduced diversity into this cast. In the movies, the powers that Fastos has are he's the kind of the inventor of the group, right?
Yeah, he's like the engineer. He's the one that takes care of their ship, it looks like. And he's the one that can manipulate the ship and the things to do. I think he's like the... I don't think he's much of a fighter in the movie. I think he's more of one of the thinkers.
But his thing is he can basically create any object that he can think of. Like he has these great, you know, engineering mind. He can think of a machine that needs to be built, and then he can build it out of thin air with his powers. It's really, really crazy. Yeah. So I can't wait to see that in movies. It's going to be really cool. Pixie, in the comic books, kind of has a lot of the same powers a lot of the Eternals have, you know, superhuman speed and strength and endurance and all those other things, but is actually thought of as one of the weaker Eternals. Mm-hmm. In the comic books is definitely seen, looked down upon by the other Eternals because, you know, she's not as strong as them. And she's, you know, kind of a little bit of a, you know,
is this played by the little kid in the,
yes,
the
little
young
girl
lady? Yeah.
In the movies. In the comics, though, she does have something she created called pixie dust, which she can throw on any creature and it turns it to stone for a period of time. It's not indefinite, but it can turn things into stone. So that's one thing that she has in the comics. In the movie, her character is, again, played by a very young girl, small character, but she has the ability to create illusions, very similar to what Loki can do, like these illusions and can make all the Eternals invisible if they're walking through town so nobody can see them and can generate basically illusions.
Yeah, I think at some point in the trailer you see her creating fireworks and then there's a bus being thrown and she turns it into red butterflies
or
something.
No, that's not her that turns it into red
butterflies. Oh, it's not?
No.
Is that
Cersei that turns it into red butterflies. Yeah.
I thought it was her because she's like protecting.
She was standing next to Dane Whitman.
Yeah. That's why I thought it was her.
Yeah, no, it was Cersei that walked up and changed it. And we'll talk about why that is. Yeah. So Cersei, the next one, in the comics, she has a healing factor, telepathy, telekinesis. She can project images, matter transmutation, and that's her power in the comics.
Okay.
And so that's her powers in the movies as well. She has the ability to transmute any form of matter into some other form of matter. And so that's why it was her that, you know, touched the bus and changed it from the bus into red rose petals so it wouldn't hurt
butterflies
everybody.
Right. Or something, yeah.
But she has the ability, and you see there's another scene in the trailer, I believe, where she puts her hand on the dirt and basically and water starts flowing because she's converting the dirt into water, basically.
Yeah.
So she can convert anything from one form of matter to another. And that's a very important power.
It's a cool power.
Yeah. And I think in the movies, it's probably going to play a very big role in a lot of different things. Yeah. Right. And again, this is one character that I do believe is going to continue on past this movie in some pretty big roles. Cersei was a member of the Avengers for several years. And
she's the one in the love triangle, right? Between Icarus
in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be cool.
Yeah. And I guess in the movie, her and Icarus had a relationship for thousands of years, but then eventually decided to go in their own ways. And when you know, Cersei's working in London at the Natural History Museum, she meets Dane Whitman and they start dating. And then we see Icarus shows up a little bit later and, you know, it's kind of an awkward situation,
right?
Old boyfriend is showing up.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. Your ex is here. Oh, by the way, he's got superpowers.
He can fly and shoot beams out of his eyes.
Yeah.
Right?
That's tough to get over.
The next one is Thena. So in the comics,
smoke show,
superhuman, and this is a female in the comics as well. Superhuman strength, speed, stamina, agility, and reflexes. So she is just kind of like this crazy, incredible, athletic, you know,
badass,
form, right? And she's an incredible warrior in the comic books as well. In the movie, she's also an incredible warrior, but her superpowers are the ability to create weapons. That's kind of you
with
see,
the cosmic energy.
She creates these cosmic energy weapons like swords and spears and daggers and all kinds of other stuff. She can just create them out of thin air. And so that'll be a really cool power to see as well. But she's supposed to be the top warrior of the group of Eternals. And I guess at one point in time, she trained some human warriors or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I think we'll hear about that. So.
Interesting. In the movie, there's a scene where the leader of the Deviants is like holding her and her eyes are all whited out. And I know I think in the comics, didn't they have a relationship? Like he was soft on her or something, right?
Yeah, Crow.
Kind of dug her a little bit.
At the time, Crow was the leader of the Deviants and they had a kind of a forbidden relationship between the two of them. And I don't know if that's going to be something that they explore in the comic, in the movie, but it definitely happened in the comics. You know, they kind of fell in love with each other and they're like, we're not supposed to like each other because we're, you know, you're a deviant and I'm an Eternal and that's not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see if like they have some type of previous relationship in the movies. That'll be
bizarre.
Interesting. Yeah.
But okay. I'm that's another storyline I'm curious to.
Yeah. Gilgamesh, in the comics, same as it is in the movie. This is a character that has incredible strength. As a matter of fact, in the comics, at one point in time, he went to Mount Olympus and volunteered to take Atlas's burden from him and bear the weight of the earth on his shoulders. So he was like, that's how strong he is. He's like, he was able to bear the weight of the earth on his shoulders for a period of time to give Atlas a break. But superhuman strength.
It's not just his feet, right? Like stomping and stuff.
No. Okay. You're thinking of that's actually the Inhumans.
Okay.
Yeah. You're thinking of an Inhuman character.
Yeah.
No, this is he just has superhuman strength. And I believe in the movies, he's super strong, but has like the ability to create this incredibly strong punch, kind of like an iron fist or whatever like that we see.
He's the Asian guy.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
And then the last one that we know is in the movie is Druig.
Okay. I'm going to be honest with you here. I knew nothing about this guy.
Yeah.
Nothing.
And
I thought since his outfit was black, he was going to be the bad guy.
Well, he's kind of the dark sheep of the Eternals family for sure. You know, he definitely has always kind of operated, you know, to the beat of his own drum. Like he was kind of like just one of those guys that, you know, always thought for himself and really didn't agree with the whole group. Definitely wanted to do his own thing. And he was always one that the rest of the Eternals had to kind of convince that this was the right thing to do because he always thought that his way was the right way. And I believe in the movies are doing something very similar where he's not happy with the role that he as an Eternal has been given. And he wants to be more involved and more active in, you know, the fate of humanity, and he's not allowed to, and it bothers him. But his powers, I believe, in the movies, are very similar to what he had in the comic books. He has telepathic powers, so he can read minds and control minds, and can do it at a pretty large scale. So he can control the minds of, you know, hundreds of people simultaneously, and I believe that's the same power he has in the movie as
but
well.
But not the Eternals.
Yes.
Oh, he can control.
Well, I don't know if he can control the mind of the Eternals. Yeah, I have no idea.
But in the movie, it looks like the clip where he's in like some kind of commune or something, he's controlling all those people. Yeah. It looks like that.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
Excited. That's cool because I did not know anything about that character at all.
Yeah, and I think we'll find, again, you know, we're making assumptions here. We're just basing this on trailers that we've seen and some of the stuff that Marvel's told us, but. You know, we know that there's a conflict with the deviants. We know that there's more deviants around than they expected. I guess they kind of, one of the reasons why the Eternals kind of went on sabbatical for hundreds of years, they kind of broke up. So we see scenes in the trailers where they're all together in uniform, fighting together and, you know, helping humans out together. Yeah. And we see that historically. But then when we meet the characters in the movie, they're separated. They haven't been together for hundreds of years at least, and they all have to get back together for one reason or another. But we know that one of the reasons they're back is because the deviants have started showing up again. You know, they're now attacking humanity again. And we're
bringing back, she says it, she explains it, bringing back half a life with the snap created such an energy that it's the awakening. Is that what she
called it? Yeah, there. So I believe, and I think this is what the movie is going to be telling us, is that when the Celestials came to Earth, they seeded the Earth with a Celestial seed. So they basically put the seed of a new Celestial in the Earth. And usually that takes thousands of years for that seed to grow into a full Celestial. And I believe part of the plot of the movie is that Thanos, the snap that Hulk did to bring all the people back from when Thanos snapped them away created such an energy surge that it sped that process up. And now the Celestial host was going to be awakening. And basically, when a Celestial is born inside of a planet, it's not very good for the planet. I mean, the planet is going to basically, it basically becomes an egg at that point in time.
Yeah, it's like eggshell, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And the planet
the
is
egg
no
doesn't
more.
Survive. It doesn't.
So, yeah, I think that's one of the things we're told very early on is that the reason why they're getting back together is that in a few days now, this Celestial is going to be born and you know, Earth is going to be no longer. And, you know, the Eternals were like, wait a minute, these are humans that we've guarded over for thousands of years, and we've fallen in love with this, you know, this planet and it's, you know, the people on this planet, and now we gotta prepare for them to all die basically. And so they're struggling with that, I think, and that's something we're gonna find out in the movie.
Yeah, I can't wait, man. Good information, Professor. I mean, I feel good about going into the movie now. I had some questions about some of the characters, but I feel good about it.
Yeah,
that's great.
And I think as we've discussed before, you know, this is not going to be your typical action Marvel movie. You know, if you're, I mean, I argue that there was probably more action in Falcon and the Winter Soldier than there's going to be in this movie.
Yeah.
There will be fight scenes. You will see them fighting the Deviants. We've seen that in the trailers. But this movie is not all action. It's a very thoughtful movie talking about the relationships between the Eternals and the relationships of the Eternals with humankind. And, you know, kind of their relationship with Celestials. And I believe we're going to get introduced to a lot of cosmic kind of theories and beings and kind of understand what's happening outside of Earth.
Yeah.
I think that's something we're going to be told.
They unpack, and this is what a lot of the reviews said, they unpack a lot of information on this. And I think that's why people are a little weary of it. And that's why I've been a little weary of the movie. They unpack and they need to go. And you can just see it from the trailer where they're back in time when they first arrived and then how they kind of developed the past history and then modern time. I mean, that's a lot to jump from time frame to time frame like that. But they got a lot to unpack and to tell the story. But again, people, you got to see this movie. It is a catalyst to phase four. I mean, Kevin Feige has said that. Everybody has said that. This movie is very important moving the phase four agenda, right?
Hey, we've been told that it's possible this the concept of, you know, mutations on humans or the mutants themselves gets introduced in this movie. And so if we're excited about learning about how mutants come about and why there might be mutants on Earth and we want to see mutants in the MCU, this might be an important movie. Hopefully that happens, right? This might be one of those movies, Titanium, that we have to watch a couple times because we're going to miss so much the first time we
absolutely.
See it. There's going to be conversation. What did they say?
Absolutely.
What did they say? What, yeah. what, you know?
What did that mean?
Yeah.
What did I miss? Absolutely.
We're going to see a ton of that. So we'll probably have to see this a couple times to kind of get the full meaning of it. But I think there's going to be a lot in there. And again, it's, you know, if you're going in there thinking this is going to be that, you know, Marvel action movie, it's not going to be. But
no, it's not
going
to be Endgame, Infinity War, or any of those. So great. Good info. Love it. Hey, let's ring the bell, Professor.
All right. Well, that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week for more Super Talk, and we'll no longer be in costume. To get in touch with us on social media, hit us up via email, supertalkpodcast@outlook.com or at supertalkpod on Twitter. Until then, stay super, everyone. We'll be right back.